In Matthew chapter 21, there is a parable that Jesus tells. It's usually titled the Parable of the Two Sons. This is not Luke 15, the parable of the prodigal son with the younger son, the older son. This is the parable of the two sons. It's a very short little story that Jesus tells. And in this parable, the father goes to his two sons separately and asks them to do some work out in the vineyard. One says, the one son says he won't do the work, but later changes his mind and goes to do it. The other says initially that he will do the work, but then he doesn't follow through. He doesn't go out and do the work. And then as a follow-up to that story, Jesus asks the crowd, which of the two did what the father wanted? And they obviously can figure it out that it's not the one who said that they would and didn't. It's the son who initially said he wouldn't do the work, but did. It's that other son who actually did the work that honored the father's request. So that lip service of the second son who said, yeah, I'll go and do it, but then didn't follow through, that lip service was not actually honoring to the father, to the father's request. The Pharisees, the comparison Jesus is making is that the Pharisees are like the son who gives lip service. The Pharisees are outwardly with their words, you know, they're trying to give a certain appearance, do a religious show to make themselves look good, but their hearts aren't really in it. And whereas the tax collectors and sinners, though they look rough, they're actually by grace through faith coming into the kingdom. And so the sinners and tax collectors are actually the obedient son in the parable. And I think one of the things that Jesus is wanting to teach through this parable, the implication here is that God doesn't just want our lip service. He wants our hearts. He wants genuine obedience. God doesn't want just robots who will mechanically say the right things and try to put on a religious show. He wants new men, new women, transformed by his love and his grace. God is not into hollow promises and empty talk, just appearances. And so I want to ask this morning, what kind of disciple do you want to be? Do you want to be that faithful son? And as relevant to our topic this morning, what kind of kids do you want to raise? What kind of kids do we want to raise? Do we want to raise kids who can talk a good Christian game? Who can appear to be good Christian kids? Or do we want to raise kids who truly, even if imperfectly, love Jesus Christ? I suppose that the father in Jesus' parable could have coerced or bribed both sons to go to work in the vineyard that day. Go out there and work, or I'll reduce your inheritance, your share. Go out there and work, or I won't buy you that new horse that you want. If you go out there and do this job, I'll pay you double. But surely that's not what God is like. God could have made us robots or puppets to control. He could lure us into obedience with promised rewards. He could bribe and coerce, but where is the love in that? Where is the relationship, the joy? Again, he wants our hearts. And so I'm going to challenge us as parents this morning, especially for those of us that tend at times to be a little more on the stern side, the rigid side, the lecture-giving, guilt-trip-laying side. I'm going to encourage us to really pursue our kids' hearts, to win their hearts, not just to make them outwardly obedient when they're in our presence, but to be winsome in our parenting so that they truly internalize what we're trying to pass on to them. I'm not going to say stop teaching them or never lecture them again, but instead I'm going to focus on building a relationship with our kids in which the teaching that we give, the discipline that we do, the consequences that we give, that these can fall on fertile hearts. How can we make our kids' hearts soft and fertile? I was listening just on the radio this morning. There was a commercial about, you know, voting, a get out the vote kind of thing. And it was, voting is the single greatest thing you can do to influence the future of our nation. And I disagree with that. I think it's important. We'll talk about that here as we lead up to the election, the importance of voting. But what about raising our kids? Is there anything more important, more valuable, more influential than raising our kids and really loving them well at different stages? And I'm going to focus a little bit more this morning on our older kids and teenagers. I'm going to show you a video clip here this morning. We're going to get to that so you can get the lights going there. This is from The Sound of Music. Raise your hand if you've seen The Sound of Music, the old musical. Okay, so most everybody, if you haven't, you should watch it sometime. Captain Von Trapp is the father of these, is it six kids or seven kids? He's a widower. He's a military guy. And he's very strict. He treats his kids like soldiers since his wife's not around anymore. And you might remember the scene early in the movie when Maria, the governess, the babysitter, comes to their house for the first time, and he's introducing the kids to them. He blows the whistle, and they come out in their uniforms. They're marching, and you know, it's this very regimented kind of thing, very disciplined, tight ship. And but he's not won their hearts. He's not the kids are outwardly obedient when he's around, but secretly, or when he's not around, they're rascals. They're driving off the governesses left and right and pulling practical jokes, kind of mean-spirited things and that kind of thing. And Maria comes from the, you know, she's a nun in training. And she comes, and at first they give her the treatment, so to speak. But eventually, she wins them over. And so you might remember different scenes from the movie where they sing with her. They come into her bedroom when the storm's going, and they sing a song together. And she goes on bike rides with them and things that they wouldn't normally do. She wins their hearts through all of this. And so the scene I'm going to show you here is kind of when these two approaches to parenting, even though she's not really their parent at that point, they come into conflict. He's been away. He's been romancing this other lady you'll see, the Baroness Schrader. He brings her back. He's been away for a while, and now there's going to be this conflict. They have this argument about how best to parent these kids, to raise these kids. So without further ado, let's go ahead and share that.
Come out of that water at once!
This is Baroness Schrader, and these are my children.
How do you do?
All right, go inside. Dry off, clean up, change your clothes, report back here. Immediately. Fräulein, you will stay here, please.
I think I'd better go see what Max is up to.
Now, Fräulein, I want a truthful answer from you.
Yes, Captain.
Is it possible, or could I have just imagined it, have my children, by any chance, been climbing trees today?
Yes, Captain.
I see. And where, may I ask, did they get these...
Play clothes.
Oh, is that what you call them?
I made them from the drapes that used to hang in my bedroom.
Drapes?
They still have plenty of wear left. The children have been everywhere in them.
Do you mean to tell me that my children have been roaming about Salzburg dressed up in nothing but some old drapes?
Mm-hmm. and having a marvelous time.
They have uniforms.
Straitjackets, if you'll forgive me.
I will not forgive you for that.
Children cannot do all the things they're supposed to do if they have to worry about spoiling their precious
clothes.
Yet. Well, they wouldn't dare. They love you too much. They fear you too much.
I don't wish you to discuss my children in this manner.
Well, you've got to hear from someone. You're never home long enough to know them.
I don't want to hear any more from you about my children.
I know you don't, but you've got to. Now, take Liesl.
You'll not say one word about
Liesl, Fräulein. One of these days you're going to wake up and find she's a woman. You won't even know her. And Friedrich, he's a boy, but he wants to be a man like you, and there's no one to show him how.
Don't you dare tell me about my son.
Brigitte could tell you about him if you'd let her get close to you. She notices everything. And Kurt pretends he's tough, not to show how hurt he is when you brush him aside.
That'll do.
The way you do all of them. Louisa, I don't know about
you,
but someone has to find out about her, and the little ones just want to be loved. Oh, please, Captain, love them. Love them all.
I don't care to hear anything further from you about my children.
I'm not finished yet,
Captain. Oh, yes, you are, Captain. Fräulein. Now, you will pack your things this minute and return to the Abbey. What's that?
It's singing.
Yes, I realize it's singing, but who is singing?
The children.
The children?
I taught them something to sing for the Baroness.
I'm guessing that not many of us are like the captain there, exactly. But are we at times bossy, a little too stern, a little bit too much about obedience? That we don't even enjoy our kids and life with them? She accuses him of not even being around long enough to notice certain things about his kids. She says they fear you. Do you want them to fear us or to love us? He says you brush them off. I don't know about the little ones yet, but somebody's got to find out about their heart. Somebody's got to get in and really get to know them. She says, oh, love them all. There's a temptation for us as parents to focus more on external compliance from our kids, to focus on the behaviors and the words that come from their lips. And in some ways, we can get some pretty good results, better than what a lot of the world is doing. If we push hard enough, we can push our kids into external obedience. We can make good Pharisees out of them. Kids who get pretty good grades and stay inside the lines. If we discipline hard enough, make enough threats, use enough guilt trips, throw out enough bribes, and they'll obey us. But will we have their hearts? Or as soon as they get a little independence, will their true hearts begin to burst at the seams, showing that all along it's been just an act? A few months ago, I was talking with a dad here at Aletheia, busy with the kids, working hard on the discipline thing, doing Bible study each night. And not seeing maybe the progress that they want to see. Anyone else been there, right? And I offered not a silver bullet, but what I thought was a good encouragement to him, something maybe missing in their equation. And I know something that's missing in my equation in our home sometimes. And I counseled him that as good as Bible study is and firm, consistent discipline, as important as all of that is, not to stop on that at all. But are you playing with them? Are you having fun with them? Is Bible reading a chore? Has it become just a duty? Is it enjoyable for you? And I've been convicted several times since then just of that in my own life. I have an ability to take something that really could be an opportunity to build a relationship and make it enjoyable, make it a good memory, and ruin it by, you know, being all about being efficient and firm and stern, and I'm going to teach these guys hard work and discipline, and instead it becomes this, you know, me bossing around and not as rich of a time as it could be. So again, I don't want to raise kids who can just put on a good religious show for as long as they're in our home. I don't want just outward compliance, but for this stuff to be really internalized. As I said, I'm going to focus mostly on parenting, but I do think there's some application here for other things. Just how do we love our kids well? But I think there will be application for how do we love How do you love your spouse well? How do we win people's hearts? Again, not just kind of saying the right things or getting the right results outwardly, but how do we win a person's hearts? Win a person's heart. So here's where we're going. I'm going to give a brief review of the calling we have, the biblical calling we have as parents. What does the Bible call us to do? And then I'm going to give just kind of a very practical list of suggestions on how we can love our kids well in a way that is winsome. Not bribing them, not forcing them, no tricks or gimmicks, just how do we love our neighbors who also happen to be our kids. So let's this will come up on the screen here. Let's review what the Bible says about the God-ordained role of parents. The Bible assumes that parents are responsible for every area of upbringing with their children. The emphasis is not on parents making sure their kids get enough to eat or wear a jacket when it's cold outside. Those things are just assumed that parents are responsible for our kids' diet and education, etc. The emphasis instead is on the training of our children to know God and to develop beliefs, values, and character that will allow them to live faithfully for Him. And the emphasis is on the spiritual nourishment that we give and our protection of our kids. And just say a few words about each of those things there. As parents, we are to give our kids Christian beliefs, help them develop a Christian worldview, that God is real, that He's the Creator, that God is a Trinity, that Jesus died and rose again to forgive me of our sins, that human beings are sinful. So we're to give them a biblical worldview. We're also to instill in them biblical values, that God is valuable, that He's supremely valuable, that worshiping Him is valuable, that holiness is valuable, that human life is valuable, that relationships are valuable, that the church is valuable, that worldly riches and achievements and possessions are comparatively less valuable. We are to instill in them godly character, to help them to love God, to help them to love others, to be honest and pure and wise, passionate for the truth, courageous, the kind of kids who will persevere through trials. We are to help them live faithfully, to be obedient to God, that they would honor their parents, not stealing but hardworking, not liars but truth tellers, not selfish but servants, not greedy but content. We are to nourish them, not just as we feed them physically, we are to feed our kids spiritually, reading and teaching God's word to them, taking them to church to hear God's word preached and taught, helping them develop a habit of seeking God through the word, through personal Bible reading and prayer. And we're to protect them from false teaching, from idolatry, from friends who would lead them astray, from entertainment choices that would lead them into sin. And part of this protection is, of course, discipline, giving them consequences or punishments that will steer them away from sin and away from foolishness. Just a couple passages. We'll remember these. Deuteronomy 6 says that we are to impress these things on our kids and to talk about them all the time. When we sit and when we stand, when we're waking up and when we're lying down at night, when we're walking along the road, we are to be teaching and training our children, impressing these things upon them. Proverbs 22, verse 6, train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not turn from it. Ephesians 6, 4, fathers are to bring up their children in the training and instruction of the Lord. This is a tall order. It's intimidating, for me at least, and one I'm always needing work on, wanting to improve. But again, the issue before us here this morning is not just are we doing these things, but how are we doing them? Hopefully, if these are things that you look at and are like, oh, I'm not doing those, you need to do them. You have to discipline your kids. You have to teach them. You have to train them. You have to feed them spiritually and protect them spiritually. But I'm speaking also to us as parents, not just to be doing these things, but to do them in a winsome way, to do them in an effective way. If we just teach our kids and discipline them and say, there, I've done my duty, I've fulfilled my obligation, might we still produce kids that know what the Bible says, but don't love what the Bible says? and love it and want to live it out? Will we raise kids who live right, but only when I'm watching? I want to fulfill my role so that when my kids leave the home, when I unleash them into the world as arrows, that they will have internalized these things, not just obeying outwardly, but obeying from the heart. Perhaps when our kids are younger, it's appropriate to focus more on external compliance, just establishing our authority, getting obedience. But especially as our kids get older, we want it to be more and more a transformation of the heart, not just doing the right thing because we made them, but because their character has been transformed by God's truth. When they're toddlers, we just say, you're not getting this until you say please. I'm not letting this thing go that I'm giving you until you say thank you. But for a 10-year-old, they should say thank you on their own. We want them to say thank you, you know, out of a response of genuine gratitude. And so, again, I'm just arguing that we need to do this here. We need to do our parenting in a way that's winsome and persuasive. We are ambassadors for Christ, not just with unbelieving co-workers and neighbors and that kind of thing, but even with our kids. We are on mission with our own kids. So just to balance out the emphasis on training, listen, I didn't read the whole verse, Ephesians 6:4. This will come up on the screen also. Ephesians 6:4 doesn't just call us to bring our kids up in the training and instruction of the Lord. It says to do this, fathers, do not exasperate your children. And then Colossians 3:21, fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. So as you do this training, this discipline, don't be so stern or boring or heavy-handed that they come to resent you and the God in whose name you do these things. Don't be so stubborn or unreasonable or ungracious or hypocritical that they don't respect you or even want to be around you. Again, it's finding this balance, giving rules without being legalistic, teaching them to respect authority without being authoritarian, teaching them doctrine without allowing it to be dry and boring, training them to obey the Lord without it becoming mechanical, going through the motions. So again, I'm not saying stop teaching them, stop disciplining them. It's finding this balance, doing it in a winsome way. So in our remaining time, I'm going to give you just, again, some suggestions. Some of these I think I'm strong in. Some of these I'm weak in. And I have times where I'm doing better at them than others and that kind of thing. But I'm going to give you five areas with a number of suggestions about how we can win our kids' hearts so that they would internalize the truth that we're training them in. So the first area is just general love and affection. I'm going to have some pictures up there from The Sound of Music, because I think if you watch that movie again, Maria wins their hearts. It's really pretty cool the way she goes about things. General love and affection. I'm going to give you a number of subpoints here. The first thing is having fun with our kids. Do you joke with your kids? Do you laugh with your kids? Do you have kind of inside jokes as a family? We can make Bible study enjoyable. We can make it fun. Not that it's just rah-rah silly time, but there are ways to make it more enjoyable than others. If you sit down with your kids and do an hour and a half of Bible study and lecture them the whole time, they're probably not going to want to do it. They're not going to grow to love God's word. With our little guys, sometimes we act things out. We make little games out of it, sing songs. And as they get older, then you have to find different ways to really make that an enjoyable time. But don't make it a lecture time. Don't make it time to, you know, heap judgment on our kids. Make chores fun if possible. Again, it's something I need work on. Do you play with your kids? Do you have fun family traditions, favorite movies to watch together? Favorite songs, favorite artists to turn on and listen to while you're around the house? Do you swim with your kids? Do you go on roller coasters with them? Do your kids want to be around you? I want our kids someday to want to come home, you know, when they're old and out of the house. I want them to want to come home, not to have to lay a guilt trip to do that, to get them. Again, I don't take this too far. Some parents are too buddy-buddy with their kids. It's all fun and games and no discipline. So if that's you, maybe ignore this one. But we do. We need to have fun with our kids and be fun with them. All right, number two is building up with our words, building our kids up with our words. God has done this with us. He has built us up. He's affirmed us, his love for us, with his words. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is my love for you. I will never leave you or forsake you. What good words from God affirming us in our identity as his children. Do we say these kinds of words to our kids? I will never leave you or forsake you. I will always love you from everlasting to everlasting. We need to affirm our kids. Do you tell your kids you love them? This is like a daily thing, or multiple times a day, I think. Even when you're angry at them, I love you. Do you tell them you're proud of them? Maybe your parents didn't do that for you. Kids need to hear it. They need to hear it. That you love them, that you're proud of them. And not just when they win the game or ace the test. You tell them you love them and you're proud of them when they've stuck with something difficult, even if they've failed, but they gave good effort. We can write our kids notes. Look them in the eye and tell them. Showing physical affection. You'll recognize these are the love languages, right? Showing physical affection, giving hugs and kisses with our little ones, cuddling. And we can't stop showing physical affection as our kids get older. It gets awkward at times. I understand showing affection to a teenage daughter is different from a three-year-old, right? But our kids need that. And statistically, kids who don't get that physical affection from their mom and dad at home, especially dad, are going to go seek it somewhere else. They're going to go seek it from, you know, a boyfriend or a girlfriend. So we've got to give good physical affection. Giving good, meaningful gifts and being generous. God is a good gift giver. He's a generous giver. Are we stingy with our kids? Are we so eager to teach them about stewardship and hard work that we never just surprise them? We're not to pamper them, but we are to give generously with our kids. And I think we should focus on gifts, giving gifts that bring people together, not just giving them stuff, but giving them gifts that will bring people together, something to do together, a trip to go on together. Again, these are the love languages, the showing physical affection, affirming with our words, giving good gifts, finding ways to serve them. When in premarital counseling with couples, we talk to the couples about becoming a student of your spouse. You should study your spouse, know which love language is their preferred. What's the best way to love them? What's the most effective? How will they receive love best? And we can do that with our kids too. What are the things that if I do these things that my kids will just really feel loved and affirmed and valued? So we can be students of our kids. And the last one there, being hospitable to their friends. Especially as they get older, friends become more and more important. They don't want to be the home that, oh, the kids don't want to bring their friends here because dad's going to embarrass me or mom's going to be weird or whatever. We want to be hospitable to our kids' friends. It's a good way to be winsome again. All right, next section here, I'm going to give you some suggestions about, again, just building a relationship with your kids. Again, the goal here is not just, you know, I provided a roof over their heads and made sure they had enough food in their bellies and that's my job. It's all done. No, our part of our responsibility here is building a friendship, building a relationship with our kids. So asking good questions and being a good listener. If you read through the Gospels, you'll notice how often Jesus asks questions, not because he's looking for information, but to draw them out. Are you the kind of parent that asks questions of your kids and it feels like an interrogation to them? Are you always grilling them? What about open-ended questions? And really listening, not looking at your phone, not looking at something else, but looking them in the eye. On the way home, we went down to Cincinnati to visit with my family last week. And on the way home, everybody else was asleep in the back. And Jackson and I were sitting in the front. It's like, I want to ask Jackson some questions just to draw him out. And I asked him questions like, what are you excited about this coming week? With school, friends, etc. What are you excited about? I asked him, have you thought about how God might want to use you as a blessing to the church as you grow? Again, really listening. Are we good listeners with our kids? Spending quality and quantity time. Good quality time, a couple hours together once a month is not going to do it. My goal is to have quality interaction with each of my kids every day. I think that is a very legitimate kind of goal, very doable. It's not doable if we're running, 20 different directions, but our kids need it, and we ought to give it to them. Do you put your phone away? Do they have your undivided attention when they say, "Daddy, Daddy, look," not when they're interrupting you, but when they say, "Daddy, watch this," or "Look at what I drew"? Do we pay attention? Do we look? Do we take interest in what they're doing, what they're wanting to show us? Do we do date nights with our kids? Entering their world. It's inevitable. Some of our kids are going to be interested in things that we don't know anything about. They're interested in a sport or an instrument or some hobby that we don't know much about. But do you love them enough to get into their world? Christ came into our world. Do we get into our kids' worlds and learn about the things that they're interested in? Do we let them into our world? Not overdoing it, telling them every detail about our passions, but do we tell them about our joys and our worries? Do we let them into our lives? Giving them space. Not letting them hole up in their room for hours and hours, but our kids need some space sometimes. Including them in family decisions, like where we're going to go on vacation. What are we going to read together as a family? What are we going to study together? What topics are we going to deal with? When it's time to give, who are we going to be generous to? Getting our kids involved in that. The third area is loving your spouse. A way to win our kids' hearts is by loving your spouse. Setting a great example for them of what a godly marriage looks like. How to romance your wife. How to honor your husband. When we're affectionate at home, when our kids are little, they want to be in on it. Later, they're oblivious to it. They're just going doing other things. At some point, it starts to gross them out. And then later, they appreciate it and maybe even strive for it. If they're grossed out, you keep loving your spouse and romancing your husband. Encouraging our kids' connection with our spouse. I want my kids to be close to Carolyn. And she wants them to be close to me. Making sure that she gets that time with them to connect with them. Never cutting each other down. I can't cut Carolyn down. If I don't respect her, why would the kids? If she doesn't respect me, why would the kids respect me? So we can see, I want to make sure each of my kids is also not only having a good relationship with me, but also having that connection with Carolyn. I know we're rushing through these, but another area here is discipline with love and respect. We win our kids' hearts by disciplining them with love and respect. We explain the rules and boundaries we give them. Easy to make rules, takes a little more time to explain. Here's my specific concern. Here's why I'm giving you this rule. I love you so much. Here's my specific concern. When they ask you for something or they ask you if they can do something, it might be your impulse to just say no right away because I said so. But why not say, I understand your request. Tell me, why would you like to have that? Why do you think that would be a good thing to do? What's the goal? What's the purpose? And then, again, carefully, lovingly explaining, I understand you want to do this. That might be an option down the road. But for now, here's my concern. Here's why I'm going to say no. So explaining the rules and boundaries we give them. Being calm and reasonable when they mess up. Blowing a gasket is a quick way to lose our kids' hearts. Exploding in anger, a quick way to lose their hearts. It's being calm and reasonable. Giving reasonable punishments or consequences. Don't ground them for life. I wrestle with knowing how long to lecture. Sometimes my lectures go on a little longer than they probably need to. Carolyn will tell me from time to time, it's like, good things to say, just maybe cut it down. I'm a pastor, I talk. That's like what I do, right? extending forgiveness. Sean taught on forgiveness last week. Once you forgive it, leave it in the past. Don't keep bringing it up. Don't keep loading, piling on. Extending grace. Last Sunday, Carolyn's parents were here with us at church, and we had lunch with them, and then right after that left down for Cincinnati. While we were at lunch, one of our little guys was a bit defiant, didn't do what we asked, and I said, okay, that's it. You don't get dessert tonight at the birthday party. And it was it's pretty strict, pretty rough punishment, but he deserved it. Sorry, I guess you know who it is now. So we got down to Cincinnati, and it was Nora's birthday. We were celebrating her birthday, and there's like these cake pops and ice cream and that kind of thing. It's like, oh man, I gave this punishment. It's pretty brutal now that we're having a birthday party. So I pulled Jonah aside and I said, look, what you did before, unacceptable. You can't do that with Mom and I. I'm going to let you have dessert tonight if you would like to have some, but then that means tomorrow no dessert at all. So we just adjusted the punishment. And I thought that was a good balance of extending grace, but also keeping the firmness. It's rare, I think, that we ought to let them off the hook completely. They need to understand their consequences. But again, we can extend grace, always reaffirming our love even as we give them consequences. We don't want to break our kids. We don't want to smother them into submission. We want to draw them out, transform their hearts by our love, restoring them. Okay, and the last one here is in serious conversations, winning their hearts with serious conversations. And these are the kinds of conversations that probably aren't every day, but hopefully often. Apologizing when we're in the wrong, modeling humility. We're not going to do these things perfectly. We are going to. We're going to get overly angry. We're going to overpunish them from time to time. And we need to actually be humble. How can we expect our kids to be humble? How can we expect them to make apologies if they don't see us doing that? Casting vision for their future. Do we have conversations with our kids looking out into the distance and saying, even though right now you're only 11, someday you're going to be a husband. Someday you're going to be a dad. Casting vision, especially in the areas of work. How do you see your kids, their giftedness? How will they be a blessing through their work, through their ministry in their local church someday? Do you talk to them about it and tell them the possibilities for them? Especially, I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I'm teaching our teens on Wednesday nights about sex and romance. And do you cast a vision for your kids about that, especially as they get into that teenage range, to start talking about all of these things and not just having one conversation about it, but lots of conversations? What would a godly husband be? What kind of man would he be? What will you need to be a godly wife? Do we help them be future oriented towards long-term success, making decisions that will bring joy over the long haul? Do we help give them eternal perspective? Find the good times to do this. Maybe it's at the supper table. Supper table is just a great place for a lot of these things to take place. The face-to-face time, the conversations. Maybe you have good conversations in the car. Maybe it's at bedtime. Maybe you go for walks. Leading them to faith. Do you have good gospel conversations with your kids? We've made it a goal in our home to have good gospel conversations early and often, to be talking about God's holiness, to be talking about our sin, and to be talking about God's grace and what he's done for us in the cross. How can we foster a tenderness to the law of God, the holy law of God, causing them to long for grace? I encourage you, don't assume that your kids are Christians or that they will be Christians. Help them understand that they have a decision to make. We've told our kids about the decision we had to make. I understood. This is what I came to understand about God and his holiness and my sin and his grace. And I had to make this choice to surrender my life to him, to surrender to him as Lord, accept that forgiveness as a gift. And so they realize they have a decision to make. Don't be pushy with the gospel. Don't try to get that, oh, get him to pray that sinner's prayer as if it's magic. Look for those opportunities when they're weighed down by their guilt. When they're weighed down and they know they're not right with God. And then you come with grace. So leading them to the faith and then leading them in the faith. And just so you know, on all these things, there are lots more that could be said, and there are whole books on, you know, how to lead your kids. I'd be glad to recommend any of these things to you, resources that would help you do that. Leading them in the faith, doing Bible study with them, reading with them, having discussions with them, and having regular checkup kind of conversations with them. How are you doing spiritually? What are you reading? How are you growing? Again, the big picture here is we want to win their hearts by building a deep connection, a deep relationship with our kids, making sure that they know we're crazy about them and really getting into their hearts. This can't be just a one-time thing. It's not a trick or a gimmick. It can't be about, here's some tool to manipulate them so I can get my way or something like that. And there's really no guarantee that it will work. But this is what love looks like. This is how we love our kids. I'm going to finish here with kind of reading through 1 Corinthians 13. The love is patient, love is kind. I think this is a great habit. You've probably heard that phrase before, praying the scriptures. And I think we can pray 1 Corinthians 13 regarding our parenting. Love is patient, love is kind. Father, help me to be patient with my kids. Help me to be kind to them. Help me not to be arrogant, full of myself. Help me to be interested in them. Help me not to be rude towards them just because I'm older or busier. Help me to use my strength and wisdom to protect them and teach them. Help me not to be self-seeking with my kids, but self-giving. Not using them to enhance my life or reputation, but to be poured out for their good. Help me not to delight in evil. Help me not to overlook their issues, but to deal with them, even though it's easier to ignore or blame or complain. Love rejoices with the truth. Help me to rejoice with the truth and teach it regularly to the kids that I love. Love endures. Help me to endure the trials of parenting, to bear with my kids in their quirkiness, in their sin, in their immaturity. Love believes. Help me to believe your word and adhere to what your word calls me to do and be as a parent. Love hopes. Help me to have hope, knowing that you give grace for the tough situations, the decisions we face as parents. We're not experts in this, but you've given us great wisdom through your word and through your body, the church. Help me to trust my kids to you. Help me to endure, not to give up, even though sometimes I want to give up or I want to just go off and do my own thing. And love never fails. Help my love for my kids to never fail. Help my love for my kids to burn red hot, even when I'm frustrated. You love me even when I don't deserve it. Help me to love my kids even when they don't deserve it. Help me to joyfully let your love overflow in me and onto my kids.